Welcome to Hot Topics in Kidney Health, brought to you by the National Kidney Foundation. Each episode, we highlight the latest in kidney research, bring you up-to-date news in kidney care, dispel myths, and answer your kidney health questions. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to help more people with kidney disease discover us. We really appreciate it.
In today's episode, we're exploring the groundbreaking field of artificial kidneys. We asked our audience to bring us their burning inquiries, and today we have a very special guest here to answer them. Dr. Shubho Roy, a bioengineer developing medical devices, is here to answer your questions and provide a sneak peek into the future of artificial kidneys.
Dr. Roy, welcome. My name is Marlena Chesner. I use they, them pronouns. Please feel free to provide your own. I'm the Digital Content Development Manager here at NKF. And would you like to get us started by telling us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. Thank you for this opportunity. So I am Shubho Roy. I'm a professor of bioengineering at UC San Francisco, which stands for University of California in San Francisco. I work in the development of medical devices. My background is engineering. And over the past decade and a half, I've been working on applying the engineering toolkit, the development of wearable and implantable medical devices ranging from sensors to wireless monitoring systems, and some ambitious projects like the development of an artificial kidney.
Yeah, it's such an exciting job to be at the forefront of this technology. So I'm wondering if you could give us an overview of exactly what the artificial kidney is and how it will work in the simplest terms as possible.
Sure, I'll be happy to. So the term artificial kidney is actually a misnomer. People can and rightfully have called dialysis machines an artificial kidney. And people have talked about portable dialysis artificial kidneys. We take a slightly different approach. We talk about an artificial kidney as being a device that will provide more functions than dialysis and closer to a transplant. And what we are working on is an implantable bio-artificial kidney. This is a device the size of a coffee cup and consists of two main components that work continuously to get rid of wastes. It consists of a first unit, the blood filter, which we call the hemofilter, that processes incoming blood to create ultrafiltrate that contains dissolved toxins, sugars, and salts. This hemofilter is coupled to a second unit that contains kidney cells. We call that the bioreactor that processes the ultrafiltrate and concentrates it into urine, which is then directed into the bladder.
That's incredible. So how different is this going to work from, let's say, a transplanted human kidney?
So the artificial kidney is intended to work like the natural kidney. It is going to provide 24/7 treatment. It will filter blood and maintain the body's fluid balance so that we do not need to worry about having replacement fluid or dialysate. The first versions of the device may not provide as much kidney function as a transplant, but enough to keep patients off dialysis. The device performance will improve in later versions as the technology advances. So unlike some of the machines that are in development by other groups and companies, ours is a totally implantable device connected to blood vessels and the bladder. There's no external connections. And it will allow the patient to eat and drink freely and be totally mobile. The patient will not need immunosuppression drugs.
So how is this powered? You know, is there a battery? Does it use the body somehow?
Sure. So how is it powered? Most medical devices require a power supply. And when we initially looked at developing an implantable device, we considered the challenges of power supply. We quickly noted that looking at pacemakers, for example, more than half the size of the pacemaker can was the battery. And the pacemaker requires a lot less energy than a pumping system that you'd need for an artificial kidney. So what we did was to design a new generation of membranes that would go in our device for filtration that can operate at very low driving pressures or very low energy requirements. such that we can use the patient's own blood pressure to drive the blood and generate the ultrafiltrate. This ultrafiltrate is laden with nutrients like oxygen and glucose that will feed the cells in the cellular component, such the cells will survive and perform their functions. So the whole system operates just based on the body's blood pressure driven by the heart.
That honestly sounds like magic to me, as someone who doesn't have that technical background. So you did mention that there's not going to be a need for an immunosuppressant medication, correct?
That is correct.
Are these cells that you're using in the device from the patient, or how does that react with it?
So the patients will not need to take immunosuppression. The pores in the membrane technology, the pores we've developed for use in the artificial kidney, are smaller than the size of immune cells and antibodies. As such, the kidney cells in the bioreactor stay isolated from the patient's immune system. Where do these cells come from? We're exploring a number of different sources. We've looked at using cadaveric kidney cells from kidneys that could not be transplanted. We've looked at using stem cell-derived kidney cells. It's a very exciting approach, but that field of stem cells for kidney is still at a nascent stage. We've also explored the use of animal cells. And because the pores in the membrane can be tuned to prevent immune components from passing through, in the future, it is possible that we might use all or any of these cells. But I think from a regulatory pathway, it's most likely to be initially cadaver cells and then potentially human cells.
That's incredible. You know, we know that 1 in 5 deceased donor kidneys are discarded in the U.S. So it'd be really great if we could give more of those kidneys a second chance by utilizing those cells. So I'm wondering, what step in the clinical trial process is the artificial kidney currently in?
Sure. The implantable artificial kidney is under development, and we have not begun clinical trials. What we've done is we've shown that the main functional components of the device, the blood filtration unit, which we call the hemofilter, and the cell therapy unit, the bioreactor, work together as intended. And we've shown that both on the bench in the lab, as well as pigs, using small-scale prototypes that we've developed. These results give us confidence that the implantable artificial kidney will work in humans once we've scaled up the device with enough capacity and conducted all the safety testing that needs to be done. So we are at a preclinical stage.
So since you're in the preclinical stage, I know this question is going to be not one that you can answer with, you know, precision, but a lot of people asked when they might be able to expect, you know, the artificial kidney being used in humans. Is there a timeline or a time when people can look forward to this technology being used?
Yes, of course. When I talk about timelines, I want to always be clear. There's a technology development timeline, and that's not necessarily a linear path, because the technology development timeline is dependent on the amount of resources available. And that has been a fundamental challenge, not just for our group, but all groups that work in the development of new technologies for kidney disease. So the actual work plan to get through the first human studies can be done in 3 to 4 years. It's possible. But the pace of progress is limited by the resources available, so that timeline could stretch out.
Living with kidney disease can be confusing. Our patient information helpline, NKF Cares, is here to help. Our trained professionals are standing by to answer your most pressing questions. Get started at kidney.org/cares/podcast. That's kidney.org/cares/podcast to get started.
Why do you think that people who, you know, scientists who are trying to develop these new technologies for kidney disease maybe aren't getting the same funding as, you know, other chronic conditions are?
It's a very interesting question, and it's one that I have pondered over. I work in a university setting, and there's obviously lots of research going on. By far, much of the bulk of the funding seems to go to cancer research, seems to go to neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, heart disease, and in terms of chronic diseases, maybe diabetes. So as I've talked with my colleagues and I've gotten a chance to meet with groups that advocate for different support for different diseases, I think there's been a shortage of awareness of the challenges of kidney disease. So the level of attention we are all getting now in terms of kidney disease and kidney disease therapy is probably two decades behind where diabetes and heart disease and cancer were. But what is encouraging is that with increased awareness, it is possible to get more talent into the field. And with more talent, you have the chances of new innovations. And also with this increased support, you can have breakthroughs. An example is immunotherapy for cancer. That is the product of the investment in awareness that was put in over the last two decades. In the kidney community, I'm hopeful that with increased awareness between the patient groups, the scientists, the clinicians, and the government, there will be increased awareness and ultimately more support for projects like ours.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It's something that National Kidney Foundation is, you know, really trying to do. We have advocates who meet with, you know, Congress and try and bring these stories out. So hopefully, you know, we'll get more funding soon and amazing projects like these can kind of take off.
Let me bring a point that in 2010, we roadmapped a pathway for the technology development through the first clinical trials. And we did that at the behest of a special program in the National Institutes of Health that said, please roadmap what it would take to get an implantable artificial kidney. And that plan, that is still pretty much as the same milestones, was timed out for 7 to 10 years. So when I wrote this out in 2010, we estimated that if the efforts are resourced appropriately, we could get to the first human testing in 2017. Unfortunately, because resources are not available, the timeline shifted. But the actual milestones in the roadmap is still very much what it was at that time. And yes, we have tweaked the plan, but actually the technology development plan hasn't shifted significantly. When we've reported some of our recent results, including the ability to produce urine in pigs, it's working as a artificial kidney should, but at a small scale for a short time period. That milestone was supposed to have happened if we had resourced accordingly in 2014. So the fact it took another 7 years or more is really a function of the availability of resources. And I illustrate that to show that we're not a discovery science project. We're waiting to make discoveries, but taking the knowledge that's already been generated and adapting it through engineering into a product concept. The better analogy for us, maybe not discovery research, but maybe engineering a system very much like the scientists are doing at NASA to build a rover for Mars. They're not discovering new physics. They're taking the physics that's already known, obviously working through the problems, but meticulously solving them, testing them, and ultimately delivering a rover that works for months, if not years, on Mars.
Well, it's definitely disheartening to hear that, you know, all of these milestones have been pushed back. It is heartening to hear that you are reaching them as you predicted, which kind of gives some hope that, you know, this is going to come out and be something that can really change, you know, the kidney care world.
You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, we are all in the community. We know the burdens of kidney disease, especially kidney failure. We know about the mortality statistics. And I think with support of groups like the National Kidney Foundation and others, if we can raise awareness and make sure that people who are stakeholders in the government, in industry, and the clinical world know that it doesn't have to be this way. then we could probably make a difference sooner than later.
Yeah, which is definitely the ultimate goal. You know, we know that around 13 to 14 people die on the kidney transplant wait list every day. And, you know, this could potentially save so many lives. You did talk a little bit about how the first prototype isn't going to function completely as well as, let's say, a living donor or a deceased donor kidney. In the future, as trials progress, is the goal to get it to that function?
Absolutely. So let me explain what I mean by that. So we can have an ambitious goal of trying to recapitulate all the functions of a kidney transplant. And I think long-term, that's our vision. When we have talked to patients and we conducted a formal survey that was published in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, we found that patients really value mobility over maybe the burdens of pills, over the burdens of constrained diet, etc. So when we got that information, we focused our efforts on what can we provide to allow patients to be mobile. And as we all know, the patients that go on dialysis have to be tethered to a machine and can't really be more totally mobile. We also know that before they go on dialysis, using the NKF staging system of CKD5, if they're at the stage of CKD3 or CKD4, they can totally live a more or less normal life. So the analogy I would say is the first version is to develop the technology so that we get the patients at a stage that's comparable to CKD3, CKD4, so they can manage their disease, be mobile, and live with the activities of daily living. And that is really a function of the membrane technology and the cellular function. As technology improves to make the membranes more efficient and the cells to be more stable and more multifunctional, then we can increase the capacity and functions of the artificial kidney. So ultimately, we could go from what I would say CKD3, CKD4 to CKD2, and then ultimately CKD0. That would be the approach. And that's not atypical. We all have handheld phones. We have iPhone 15 now, but we started with iPhone 1, which had a lot less functions. As the technology improves, we'll improve. But most important at first is to provide mobility.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, with the correct diet and exercise, they feel really good on, you know, at that level of kidney disease. So I think that's a great place to start, is to get people off the dialysis machine.
Again, when we first looked at this through our scientific lens, our kidneys have a host of functions. Maybe there's seven different important functions, seven different key functions, as we say. But except for two of them, which is basically removal of toxins and what I'm going to call balance of bodily fluid, volume homeostasis, everything else can be managed by medication and minor changes to lifestyle. So the only two that can't be performed by medication and lifestyle is what dialysis largely does. So in a way, the artificial kidney is taking over those functions the dialysis machine does, but provides additional functionality to make sure you do not have the ups and downs of dialytic therapy, and you have the benefits of lifestyle in terms of mobility and ability to eat and drink freely.
Yeah, which is, you know, cannot be understated how important that is for quality of life. I'm also curious, we know that people on dialysis really have to look out for infection, you know, at their port sites. And I'm curious if there's going to be, you know, we already know there's not going to be a need for immunosuppressants. So is there that same risk of infection?
It's a great question. Any medical device that you implant always introduces infection risks. You've talked about dialysis. Most of those infections are because we have a procedure that violates the skin 3 to 4 times a week, even in case of hemodialysis, with PD, much more so. If you had to make sure the device was clean, meaning no bugs on it, with the right sterilization techniques, surgically implanted, but then you close it, there's no additional opportunities for pathogens, germs to get in. So in that sense, one might look at this and say the chances for infection after this surgical a way down compared to standard dialysis procedures. One of the questions I've been asked by some patients is, can they go swimming? And the answer is But yeah, why not? Because with patients who have PD and others, they really have to be careful. Here, it's totally implanted. Yes, you could go into a pull. It's not going to violate the path, like dialysis access with.
Just another added bonus of this incredible, you know, technology. I'm also curious, what do you think the impact is going to be on the transplant wait list, you know, when, let's say, when artificial kidneys are available?
Sure. So as we know, there are almost 100,000 patients on the wait list in the United States. Worldwide, there's probably 3 million people who are undergoing dialysis, and there's probably others we don't even No, because they don't have access to dialysis. And despite the fact we have 100,000 patients on the wait list in the United States, we only do about 20,000 to 25,000 transplants. And despite all this social engineering via social media, DMV encouragement, we've really not bumped up that number significantly. So of the 80,000 people that are on the wait list, and we know there's another 400,000 that are not on the wait list but could use, you know, a transplant. The idea is that you'll be able to provide a solution that many patients would otherwise not have because they would never get a transplant. So what this will do is make therapy of total renal replacement available to a wider group of the kidney failure population. And will it impact the transplant wait list? I think there'll always be people who are going to be on the transplant list, and they should be. But for many people, this may be more than sufficient to provide them an improvement in lifestyle in a quicker time frame than they wait for a transplant, which may never actually happen.
Yeah, I could see this being, you know, an incredible source for someone, let's say, who doesn't have familial support or that support system to take care of them after the transplant, or so many of the little things that can get you disqualified off of the list that aren't necessarily related to your health.
Yeah, I mean, we also know, you know, people who are on transplant are immunocompromised, and that makes them susceptible to so many other things. And in the recent pandemic, kidney patients were especially vulnerable. So the possibility of avoiding the transplant is a big potential win for these types of patients.
Absolutely.
But I think the other thing about having an artificial kidney is it takes the concern from both the patient and the physician about, you know, risk of getting a transplant away. Meaning, what I mean by that, it's the physician / nephrologist / transplant surgeon. If the patient requires one, then they get it off the shelf and use it, as opposed to waiting for this with uncertainty as to when there may be an organ.
Yeah, and even, you know, in the interim, if people maybe, let's say, have it and can then wait the 5 to 10 years it can take to get, you know, a transplant.
Your voice can be the sound of change. The National Kidney Foundation's Voices for Kidney Health community includes patients and care partner advocates working with elected officials to help those facing the challenges of kidney disease and to promote better kidney health nationwide. We advocate for policies that will help prevent and delay kidney disease, ensure quality care for patients with kidney failure, and make certain that everyone who wants a transplant can get one. Join us today at kidney.org/voices. That's kidney.org/voices.
So at what stage of CKD do you anticipate that someone would have the artificial kidney implanted? Is this like a pre-kidney failure type of surgery, or are they waiting till about that point?
Yeah, I have to give probably a practical answer to that would be how we might do this. For the first clinical studies, it would have to be a patient already on dialysis. I don't think would preemptively do this without more data already. So I think the first clinical studies would likely have to be on patients that already on dialysis. And over time, as you gather data, and you know, one might think about preemptive use of the artificial kidney. And we'll obviously learn a lot from other scientists that are developing, you know, whether it's xenokidneys from animals or more portable dialysis, whether preemptive therapy actually has a benefit. And if so, then this becomes an option.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you definitely would want to start with the dialysis, you know, patient and move on from there. Who would qualify for an artificial kidney? If someone was, let's say, disqualified for a kidney transplant, would they still be eligible for a kidney, an artificial kidney?
Depends on why they got disqualified or why they're not on the list. Some people may just have too high a level of antibodies that they will never be able to get a transplant. Others are pretty frail, that is the burden of surgery is going to affect. Others can't handle the immune suppression. So obviously this is very speculative and the information may change as we learn more, but I would imagine, except for the patients that can't withstand surgery, the artificial kidney would be possible for them.
That's incredible. And I hope it gives some people listening hope. I am curious, are there any side effects that you are anticipating from the artificial kidney that maybe we're not looking for?
I think with any medical device that's implanted, there's a lot of potential for side effects. But at a general, broad level, you'd want to be obviously aware that a foreign body does elicit response. But because the cells are protected inside the device from the immune system, and the device is designed to be biocompatible, we don't anticipate any significant side effects like one may expect with a transplant, for example.
How long do you expect the implanted artificial kidney to last? Like, what are we hoping for there?
We expect this to be a permanent device.
Wow.
So this should last. But being engineers and scientists, we also should be prepared that devices don't last forever. So pacemakers, after six to eight years, you may need to change out the battery. With coronary stents, it's very possible they need a new one. They're designed to be permanent, but they need a new one. So the approach we have taken, this is supposed to be permanent. Speaking with our colleagues in the clinical side, the surgery is likely to be something similar to a transplant surgery and is going to require you to go into the hospital. The device is going to be located in the abdominal region. It's going to be connected to your blood vessels like doing a kidney transplant and then another connection to the bladder. Should work. 10 years. But again, from our survey, we heard from patients, even if it works for less than 5 years, there's a good sizable group of patients that would still want to use it because it gives them the freedom from going to dialysis center. So our designs are intended to be a permanent device with the understanding that if there is a need to do replacement or maintenance, a physician, a transplant surgeon, a vascular surgeon, a general surgeon, a nephrologist should be able to go and either replace the filter, refresh the cells.
I will say every 5 years sounds a lot better than every day or, you know, 4 days a week, going out.
You bring up a good point. When I first started working on this, I was always thinking it should work for a long time and thinking along, it should be a permanent device. But meeting with patient groups, including some from our local NKF chapter here, they said, Dr. Roy, don't let the perfect be enemy of the good. If you can give us the ability to travel. And yes, even if some of the patients, even if I need to come in every year, I'll be more than willing to do so. Maybe communicating and really driving home the point about the lifestyle challenges of dialysis. So it changed how we approached the project, saying that let's try to get something that gets patients out of dialysis and then continue to improve the technology as the technology is improves.
Do you anticipate that the artificial kidney is going to replace dialysis and transplant? Because right now it sounds like it's going to be kind of like the stopgap between the two.
Yeah, I think initially it will be a solution for people that don't get a transplant or are unlikely to get a transplant. Over time, it's very possible that it will become an option that will overcome the need for transplant. But I think realistically, we should, based on what we know about organ replacements, that a transplant will always be an option for some people. And frankly, dialysis will need to be an option for a number of people that can withstand surgery. So this will be one more treatment option that will be available and hopefully provide many of the benefits of a transplant, getting them away from the burdens of dialysis, and with time, get closer and closer to transplant. Will it ever replace transplant completely? I don't know. But again, just knowing medical technology, I think there'll always be a need for transplant, there'll always be a need for dialysis, and maybe there'll be a significant group of people using an artificial organ.
It sounds like any surgery is expensive. And, you know, dialysis is currently covered by Medicare. So is the artificial kidney surgery something that you're going to try and work, you know, with insurance companies to get covered?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I anticipate that, you know, this is obviously the future. Insurance would cover it, whether it's private insurance or Medicare. And we've actually done a cost analysis, and we've determined that an artificial kidney will, after the initial surgery, will cost less than transplant because we do not need immune suppression. And because it avoids the complications of dialysis, it'll avoid all the costs associated with dialysis. And for those of you who do not know, the annual maintenance costs for transplant is about $35,000 a year, mostly because of the drugs. And dialysis costs Medicare on the average about $100,000. So if we avoid the need for immune suppression drugs, we have to pay for the surgery, you can see how much potential savings there are.
Yeah, honestly, sounds like the artificial kidney from all angles, you know, from insurance, from the patients to, you know, the nephrologists and other surgeons. It's really a win.
I'd like to think so as well. And I think we have to make sure that people who are stakeholders who pay for this, and the government, more of the clinical community that sees the patients, and the patient community all say, look, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, and we have to make that when as short as possible.
I'm curious if you have any advice, let's say someone's listening and they want to tell, like, let's say their legislator that, you know, they want you to back this to support these projects. What would you suggest that they do?
Yeah, I suggest a couple of things. Definitely raise awareness, but talk to your friends and family about the need for support for kidney disease research, and specifically technologies that address the needs of people on dialysis. Second, write to your legislators, making the same message, encouraging them to support initiatives like KidneyX, support of research at the National Institutes of Health, but also focus them on technologies that can help the dialysis patients. Then I also encourage the patients in the National Kidney Foundation community to support the NKF in its efforts to raise awareness, but also raise funding for innovation. As you may know, NKF is an innovation fund, and the innovation fund is intended to advance technologies. So having support for the innovation fund, which will hopefully invest in groups like us to advance the technology, will be a big step forward.
Absolutely. And if anyone is listening, you can go to Voices at Kidney Health, and that is our advocacy group. And we actually have a petition to support funding for kidney disease. So that's something easy everyone can go do right now to support projects like these.
You can also join our social media channels, and our website is kidney.ucsf.edu to learn more about the kidney project. And also there are links there in how you can participate in advancing the development of a implantable artificial kidney.
Thank you for listening. Do you have any questions? Email us directly with your comments and suggestions at nkfpodcast@kidney.org. We hope you will join us next time. And from all of us at NKF, we wish you good health.